Children with strong social skills in kindergarten are more likely to thrive as adults. That's according to a new study that we will discuss this hour. Hello, I'm Joy Cardine, in for Kathleen Dunn. Kathleen is under the weather. She hopes to be back tomorrow. We will talk about this new 20-year study that shows that the social skills of children may be a key factor that leads to their well-being, their success as adults. And we'll wonder why this is, and we'll wonder what we can be doing to teach kids better social skills. And welcome your questions at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post a comment on the Kathleen Dunn Show Facebook page. Let me welcome our guest. Happy to have with us Dr. Mark Greenberg, founding director of the Prevention Research Center for the Promotion of Human Development at Pennsylvania State University. Hello, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Joy. Glad to join you today.
Well, let's talk about this, your study. It was a huge undertaking, 20 years following the same children, nearly 800 of them. Tell me how you went about doing this.
Well, this was a study funded by the National Institute of Mental Health and the National Institute of Drug Abuse. It began in 1990, and it took place in four locations in the United States, in Seattle, Washington, through the University of Washington, in Nashville with Vanderbilt University, in Durham, North Carolina, through Duke, and in three small towns in Pennsylvania. And we identified children when they were in kindergarten, and we've now followed them up to age, in the current report, age 25. And this was part of also an intervention study in which we also looked at kids that were very high risk for aggressive behavior, and we did interventions with them for a number of years. It's called the Fast Track Project. People can find out more at fasttrack.org. But in the paper that we're talking about, we looked at the kids that we didn't intervene with. We looked at just children who were living pretty much in high crime, high delinquency neighborhoods, or in Pennsylvania's case, in small towns that had some economic difficulties. And we got to know these children and families very well. We visited the families on a regular basis in their homes to get to know the parents and how they were supporting their kids, to look at parent-child interactions. And then we, of course, saw these kids regularly at school throughout their school life from, you know, kindergarten all the way till graduation. And then we began to follow them as young adults. And so the report we just published was from kindergarten all the way to age 25 in these four cities.
So tell me, what was the key finding here, that if children had good social skills, they were more likely to be successful adults?
That's right. And so what we did is we want to know if there's a sort of simple ways that we can assess children early that really will predict how they do as teens and as young adults. And so one of the many things that we measured was just a simple 8-item measure by the teachers in first grade in kindergarten of children's pro-social skills. They're really their ability to get along with others, to calm down when they're upset, to pay attention in the classroom, those kinds of things. And the children's social competence score we looked at its relationship to how children were doing later on. We found that this was a scale in which teachers rated from never to always, so things like how well they make friends or how well they resolve conflict with friends. And we found that just a 1-point increase on this 5-point scale led kids to be twice as likely to have a college degree by age 25, 54% more likely to earn a high school diploma, and 46% more likely to have a full-time job by age 25. But also decreased their time spent in juvenile detention, the chance that they would have an arrest record by age 25, and also how much they were recently binge drinking or if they were on public housing waiting lists. So lots of what we'd call adult labor market outcomes, things that matter economically for us. Now, you would say, well, sure, children's social competence may be important, but maybe this is really just a function of what social class they're from or were their parents teen parents or not, or Did they live in a good or bad neighborhood? Those kinds of things. Or maybe it's not the social competence. Maybe it's their academic abilities and their IQs that are really predicting these adult outcomes, like having a stable job. So what we did is some sort of complicated statistical analysis, because we knew all these things. We had visited all these families. We saw, we rated their neighborhoods, and so did the parents. We looked at the number of family life stressors they'd had since the child was born. We looked at, of course, the social class and education and income of the family. We did testing on the children's early reading achievement and other factors. And what we did is we covariated all these. So we said net of all these other things, even if reading achievement, children's reading abilities in their kindergarten predicts these adult outcomes like having a stable job, once we know that, does the children's social emotional abilities as rated by the teachers on a simple 8-item rating predict even better? And that's what it does. So once we've controlled for all these other variables, all these other abilities and demographic background variables that we think influence children's adult outcomes, and we've already looked at all those, then we ask the question now, does the teacher's rating of 8 items in kindergarten, what does it do? And it does all these things. It predicts twice as likely to attain a college degree, more likely to have a high school diploma, less likely to be on psychotropic medications during school, less likely to have ever been in special education, as well as these adult outcomes such as criminal arrest.
Yeah, that is just amazing. But to talk a little bit more on the range of social behaviors you're looking at and how you determined if they were good or not.
Well, we didn't determine that. We had items that we asked the teachers, and they just ranked from never to always how good children were at these skills, and so these were simple items like, as I said, getting along with others, being able to calm down when you're upset, taking other people's points of view, and so very, very simple items, and teachers ranked them from not being very good at these to being very good at these, and we just made a composite score of these items.
Okay, that's what and I'm just trying to get to some of those social skills that we're looking at. I mean, we're looking at what about sharing or you know that kind of thing. I mean, were there specific things like that besides getting along with others, calming down, and listening to other points of view?
That's right. And so these 8 items sort of summarize these kinds of abilities that have to do with children's skills, and in fact, those are essential items. We looked at: can they calm down when they're upset? Are they very good at understanding their own and others' feelings? Are they aware of their effect on other children's behavior? Do they work well in groups? Are they able to play by the rules? Can they control their temper when they are upset? Do they share materials? Do they cooperate with their friends without prompting? Are they helpful to others? Are they able to listen to others' points of view?
Yeah, and why do you suppose that is? Why do you suppose that the kids that did better with these social skills did so much better as young adults?
Well, we think of it as sort of what we'd call a developmental cascade phenomena. That is, children that are able to get along well with others are more likely to be involved in pro-social interactions. And they're also more likely to get along well with their teachers. And when they're doing that, they're more accessible to learn, as they're settled in the classroom, they're not anxious or angry, and they're able to both pay attention more to their peers and get more out of their peer interactions. But they're also more likely to get along with teachers and to pay more attention in the classroom. And so that has a sort of a cascading effect over time. The more I'm getting along with kids, the more kids are inviting me to do things. The more friends I have, the more activities I become involved in. And that's healthy for children to bond to friends and to bond to the school as a place where they're having fun and they're learning.
Yeah, so what is the takeaway from this research? What should we be doing to help encourage more kids to be successful adults?
Right. Well, I think there's a number of takeaways. First of all, I think it tells us something about the importance of what goes on early in development. that by kindergarten, the children's abilities to get along with others, to do these kinds of things we've talked about, be patient, pay attention, et cetera, are already predicting adult outcomes. And so we need to be thinking about the disadvantages that many children face in early childhood and in the preschool years. And we really need to make sure that there's a high-quality education for teachers, and that children, especially disadvantaged children, children are more likely to have these difficulties, are in classrooms in which there's high-quality, evidence-based social-emotional learning. So there's a field we call social-emotional learning, and people that are interested in this might find that they'll get the best information on this from anywhere in the world at CASEL, the Collaborative for Academic Social and Emotional Learning in Chicago. It's CASEL, CASEL.org. It's sort of the central organization, that nonprofit that facilitates quality research and evaluation in this field. And we now see somewhere around a third to half of American public schools instituting social-emotional learning in their classrooms. What's really important is it also be done well in Head Start and in preschool classrooms, as we see more preschool classrooms opening up all across the country, this large movement of early childhood over the past decade. We don't want just children to be in preschool classrooms. We want them to be in high-quality classrooms with well-trained teachers that are using well-studied, evidence-based curriculum.
And is it important that this happened before kindergarten?
Well, it's important at every stage in development. As a parent, I would say that I want my children to be in classrooms in which teachers are supporting children to develop these kinds of skills at every age. And we know that even if we wait till children are in middle school, we still know that these social-emotional learning programs in careful randomized trials show positive effects in children's development even in the adolescent period. Now we're talking more about children not just getting along with others, but being able to resist early drug use, to resist delinquency, to manage their beginning dating relationships in a healthy way. So while we can intervene with these to teach children these skills at every developmental period, we know that the earlier we begin to do this, the more likely it is they'll develop this developmental cascade of positive outcomes that will build across time. So the earlier we start, the better. And we know from well-known randomized trials, very careful studies in the preschool period, that if we randomize schools and half of them get an evidence-based social-emotional learning program that teachers use in the classroom, say, two times a week, compared to schools that are exactly the same that don't have those evidence-based curriculum programs, that we see differences right away, and that they maintain across time, that children who are in these classrooms that have evidence-based models have outcomes 5, 6, 7 years later, all the way through elementary school, that they're able to maintain attention better in the classroom. They show lower rates of hyperactivity and lower rates of aggressive behavior.
We'll talk more about these social, emotional learning programs and the importance of teaching children these social skills in order to help them develop into healthy, successful adults. Talking with Dr. Mark T. Greenberg, founding director of the Prevention Research Center for the Promotion of Human Development at Pennsylvania State University. He's telling us about the results of this new study. It was a 20-year study that shows that the social skills of children when they were in kindergarten may be a key factor that leads to their well-being in early adulthood. What do you think? Do you agree that we ought to be teaching this more? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, in for Kathleen Dunn today. Kathleen hopes to be back tomorrow. We are talking about what helps children develop into successful adults. A new 20-year study links early skills, social skills, in better outcomes when it comes to education, employment, and criminal justice. We are talking about why this is and how we might be able to teach children these skills better. 1-800-642-1234 is our number if you'd like to join in. Do you agree that these social skills are important to teach our youth? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Kathleen Dunn Show Facebook page or tweet us at K Dunn Show. Let's take some calls. We have Kathy in Winona, Minnesota with us. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. I have two children. They were 18 months apart, and when they were born, we decided that we weren't going to do daycare. So my husband and I worked opposite shifts, and we overprotected them and kept them safe from everybody. And by the time they got to kindergarten and preschool, they were really out of the loop, and I realized it was bad almost, but I realized that these kids that had been in daycare from the time they were born, which was the majority of them, had far better social skills than my kids. And I believe that they were always a little bit lacking in that department, and it made me sad.
Yeah, a reaction, Dr. Greenberg? Oh, I don't know. Oh, I'm sorry.
Hello.
Yeah, I'm sorry. We didn't have your microphone on, so to speak. Go ahead.
Okay, so it's a great question from the caller or a comment. You know, each child has their own personality and is different in their own ways. But children that have more peer experience these days, which usually they'll get, in preschool and in daycare, can often really help them to learn how to get along with others. But the fact that your children didn't go to early daycare probably gave them other skills and other abilities that also strengthen their lives. And we wouldn't say that either going to daycare or not going to daycare is a good thing. It really would depend on the child and the family and making a decision that you thought was right for your family.
Yes, and I understand that, and I guess you're right. And but I always felt bad because I felt like I had kind of put them, rather than doing something wonderful them for them, I felt like I had kind of failed them, if that makes sense.
Well, yeah, of course, I hear the regrets of a parent, and I could tell you some of my own, of course, too. But it may be that it did put them at a bit of a disadvantage in getting along with other children, and that's exactly why we want to have high-quality social-emotional learning programs in the schools, because we know that children that might come to school not being able to take the perspective of others, to play well in groups, to manage the conflict and rejection that occurs in all interpersonal relationships, teaching kids those skills and making them an explicit part of the curriculum is really important. And maybe if your children had been in a classroom in which the teachers were well-trained in these things, in fact, they would have caught up quite quickly.
Yeah. Can you give us an idea of how a teacher will be teaching these skills? What is a high-quality social-emotional learning program?
Right. Well, first of all, I should disclose that I'm one of the developers of a program. It's been around for 35 years in American education and in about 3,000 schools around the world. It's called the PATHS curriculum. It stands for Promoting Alternative Thinking Strategies. And what we want to see in a good curriculum is that it's sequenced. So it has a very good developmental sequence where we're teaching one skill before the next that fits in a developmental sequence, that it's fun for kids, and it's linked to their other academic abilities, to their language arts. So, for example, if we're teaching children how to make friends, we might have them then write stories about friendship. So that we're not just teaching something about how children can be nice. We're linking it directly to their integrating with their other academic parts of the day. For example, in third grade, let's say we're teaching children how to overcome an obstacle. We might do this by introducing a biography of someone. It could have been someone from Wisconsin that did something very important where they had to overcome an obstacle. Or it could be Aung San Suu Kyi, for example, who is the Nobel Prize winner in Myanmar, who gave 30 years of her life under house arrest because she believed in the concept, the idea of democracy. And we might have children learn about Aung San Suu Kyi and then reflect in their own life, what are their goals and how do they maintain the ability to keep a goal even when they're feeling really frustrated or they're feeling they're never going to reach the goal. So we want to integrate what's happening in children's own lives with what's happening in the rest of the academic day, so this becomes an integrated part of their developmental processes.
You have written that empathy and compassion are core dimensions of human nature that can and should be nurtured. Are these programs teaching children to be more compassionate, to be more, have more empathy?
I think they are. The concept of empathy and compassion is an important one, and in the Western world, we've just been thinking about these for the last 10 or 20 years. And some of these interventions, some of these classroom programs, have been shown to increase children's empathy, to increase their caring for others. And we would do this at different ways, of course, at different stages in development. So with young children, we're really interested in their ability to share with others and to take other people's points of view and to understand how other children feel. And that's the core component. That's what empathy is being able to understand how another feels, to feel what another person is feeling. When we talk about compassion, this is something that really develops a bit later over time once we have empathy. And that is not just the ability to feel what another person feels or understand how someone else is feeling, but also the desire to support them, but to, as we would call it, to relieve their suffering or to help them out in a tough situation. It's not just the ability to take another person's point of view, but it's the desire to really be of aid to them in addition. Now, how can we do this in schools? Well, we can do it in lots of ways. One wonderful way is what we call service learning, which is to get especially teenagers, middle school and high school kids, involved in their communities, to do community service projects, but ones that are really meaningful, one where they really understand and take other people's points of view, in which they really see that they, as young people, can really benefit others. And that could be helping elderly people, it could be working in food banks, it could be building something new in the community, but it also could be around the issue of the environment, helping to make our environments healthier places for people.
And you also indicate that nurturing empathy and compassion can result in physical benefits, such as stress levels. Can you explain how and what some of these other benefits can be?
Yeah, so one of the interesting things is that when we are able to help people to connect to what you might call their better selves by being, for example, more empathic or compassionate, it turns out that it not only is good for others, but it's good for them. So people who are we even know this from randomized intervention trials, where we'll take half of people and we'll have them do a gratitude intervention where they'll think about what they're grateful for each day or write gratitude journals, or we'll have them do something in their community to help others. And just the fact of helping others actually improves the physical health of the person who is providing the help. We're very interested in teachers. Teachers have a very stressful job, one of the most stressful jobs, I think, in all of our society. And we've been doing interventions to help teachers become more compassionate, more kind, and more caring in their classrooms. And when we do that, we not only see that they improve in their instruction with students, they enjoy their work more, but it also decreases their physical health symptoms. So, for example, in a study we've just done, we show that doing mindful yoga with teachers each morning, teachers come about 2 days a week, in a randomized trial, led teachers to have lower blood pressure, to change their physiological response to stress, but also to enjoy teaching more. So these benefits are not only psychological, they also are physical.
I'm Joy Cardine talking with Dr. Mark Greenberg, founding director of the Prevention Research Center for the Promotion of Human Development at Pennsylvania State University. He's talking with us about new study. It's a 20-year study that was just released, showing that the social skills of children as early as kindergarten may be a key factor that leads to their success in adulthood. We are talking about how we can improve the social skills of children, how we can teach these social skills to children, how we can teach things such as compassion and empathy to children. And we wonder if you have any questions about this, or perhaps some thoughts on this. What do you think? Do you think that empathy and compassion are important to teach our children? How do you practice empathy and compassion in your own household? We'll talk some about how parents might foster this in their children as well. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Kathleen Dunn Show Facebook page or tweet us at K Dunn Show. Todd in Appleton is with us next. Hello, Todd.
Hi. I wanted to ask the doctor a question about child development. This goes back before your survey began, actually. I have a friend who went to school, developed in school during the 1980s and late 70s, who was a successful self-business owner, but is terrified of school. This came up in a conversation of going back to school, possibly getting some certifications in the field that he's in. And he explained to me that when he was a child, he had a lot of emotional problems as a result of a divorce and was placed in what used to be called special ed. Not all day, but a couple hours of the day, he would be taken out of the regular mainstream classes and put in a special ed class. Of course, being kids, they were ostracizing him because he was what they considered, excuse the term, retard, but that's what they called him. And this had a tremendous effect on him. He later had problems with the police, but this is all behind him, and he's doing very well now. But I guess my question is there a possible negative situation? Do you advocate separating kids that might potentially have emotional problems from the main class, or keeping them integrated with the regular class?
Dr. Greenberg?
Sure. Well, that's a great but somewhat complicated question, because it would depend, of course, on the child and what their concerns or problems was. But in general, we think the best thing is to keep children in regular classes and provide them with support inside the classroom, rather than having them. What happened to me when I was a child, of course, with kids, is they would disappear into special education and we would never see them again. We know that putting a whole group of children with aggressive behavior problems, for example, together can actually make them all more aggressive, because it reinforces this behavior and very hard for teachers to control. So we think, for the most part, it's better to keep children in their regular classrooms and bring support into the classroom, so the teacher has extra support, the children are getting extra social-emotional skills training, so they can catch up, if you will, social-emotionally with other kids, learning how to manage their aggression and their impulses, how to wait, how to get along and make friends with others. And by doing that, we don't put them in a situation where they may be traumatized, as this young man was. And this gets to a sort of, I think, a broader issue, and that is the issue of bullying in our schools. And we hear a lot about bullying these days, and we want to stop bullying. When I speak publicly, which I do quite often, I ask everyone in the audience to raise their hand if they've ever been bullied. And what you see is about 99% of people raise their hands. So we've all experienced at some time or other the issue of being bullied. So we don't stop bullying by telling children not to bully anymore. Children don't like bullying. Even if they're a bully, they know it's a bad thing, and they know adults don't like it. Instead, what we have to do is teach them the developmental skills that would help them to make friends and to see that making friends is more fun than hurting the feelings of other children. And there's lots of research now showing that when we do these social-emotional learning programs in schools, it not only makes the classroom a better place, but it does reduce bullying. And the interesting thing is, not only does it reduce bullying, but it increases academic achievement. So we have a study called a meta-analysis that was published a few years ago by Castle, CASEL.org. It was an analysis of many studies, and what it showed that is, on average, if your child is in a school with an evidence-based social-emotional learning program, your child's likely to have an 11% increase in their reading and math skills on state achievement tests compared to a child that's equal in skills at the beginning, but is in a school that's not using evidence-based social-emotional learning. And that's because the more children can settle down, they can they're less anxious, they're getting along better with their friends and their teachers, the more likely they are to be able to concentrate. And if you've ever been a teacher, you know that the most difficult thing is to get 28 children to pay attention at the same time, to be in alignment so you can actually spend as much time in the classroom as possible learning. And what we know is these social-emotional learning programs can help children to become more engaged in the classroom because they're emotionally settling down. They may have come into school that morning anxious or angry. Something may have happened in their family or with their siblings. And by opening up the classroom to be able to recognize how people are feeling, it allows children to settle down and be able to come more focused and engaged in learning. And when that happens, of course, we don't need to pull as many children out of classrooms for behavior problems, and fewer children are showing up in the principal's office, and we show a lower rate of special education. And that's exactly what this 25-year study showed, is that children who are rated as having better social-emotional skills in kindergarten not only were more likely to graduate from high school and more likely to graduate from college, but they're also less likely to spend years in special education.
Yeah. By the way, the Kathleen Dunn Show will dedicate an hour show on bullying a week from today, next Wednesday at 2 p.m. Let's take another call from Ashley in Coloma. Hi, Ashley.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I had a question on what your guest thought about school seems to be a unique social dynamic in the sense that you have a major group of individuals that are all the same age, and the only time that they interact with other people of different ages may be between classes during their recess. And I was wondering what he thought about that, and I can take my answer off the air.
Meaning, Ashley, you think it would be better if there were a bunch of different ages altogether? Oh, she already left. So how does that play into it that we have classrooms of kids that are mainly the same age going through our schools?
Well, I think that there's reasons why we want to have children all at the same age as they go through school. But I think the caller is talking to something different, and that's the value that kids have by being in multi-age group settings. And there's lots to be learned as being a younger child, being with older kids, and there's lots to be learned being an older child with younger kids. So, for example, there's a lot of work these days on how older children, let's say middle school children, can come back to the elementary schools and mentor, say, reading tutoring or other kinds of mentoring programs, first and second graders. And what we see is that the benefits are not just for the first and second graders who get more individualized experience at say, reading or math, but there are equal benefits for the older kids in becoming a sort of an older, wiser teacher to younger children. It helps them to become more engaged and value their own education.
Yeah. Dr. Mark Greenberg, founding director of the Prevention Research Center for the Promotion of Human Development at Pennsylvania State University, talking with us about the results of his 20-year study, which finds that kindergarten children who had good social skills also turned out to be successful, more successful adults. Talking about how we might be able to teach stronger social skills to children. And welcoming your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine, in for Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine, in for Kathleen Dunn. We are talking about what helps children develop into healthy, successful adults. And the answer is better social skills. We are talking about what we might do to teach children better social skills, better social and emotional skills. And we're welcoming your thoughts on this, your questions for Dr. Mark Greenberg, founding director of the Prevention Research Center for the Promotion of Human Development at Pennsylvania State University. And our next caller is Mike in Genesee. Hi, Mike.
Yes, hi. I had a question. I have family members, quite a few of them, that are involved in education, and I'm wondering how you find the balance. I think you're absolutely right with how these kids can be helped to do better and achieve better, but I'm wondering how you find the balance between the rest of the classroom when they are integrated into a standard classroom, between those that don't need that assistance and the disruptions in the classroom. And I know you were saying that they need to have additional staff with the teachers, but from my understanding, in a lot of the areas in Waukesha County where I'm at, there is not more than one assistant in a classroom, and oftentimes it's not a special ed qualified teacher, it's an aide in that department, and they aren't able to actually administer any kind of additional learning. They have to then go track down the special ed person from somewhere else in the building, and it ends up taking, you know, 15-20 minutes sometimes to settle a child down like that. And I'm just wondering where that balance is and how a district can better achieve it so that both the emotional child and other children in the classroom can learn at their best ability.
Well, thanks for the question. It's a really good one, and it really leads to a sort of broader, maybe systemic discussion about education in America today. So we're talking about the effectiveness of social-emotional learning programs, and one of the things we know is when these programs are implemented well by teachers, all children benefit, not just children that may be showing early behavior problems. All children benefit because the classroom is a more engaged learning environment. It's a more positive classroom climate. And therefore, because children aren't being disruptive, all children are learning more. So then we can ask the question, okay, what do we do to ensure that educators are effectively trained to teach these social-emotional skills, just like we want teachers to be good at teaching reading or good at teaching math or good at teaching science and technology. We want them to be good at explicitly teaching these kinds of skills that we and many other people have shown predict the adult outcomes, the healthy adult outcomes. So then let's look backwards, and what we do is we go back to college education. We look at teacher training, and we see that there is not one university in the United States that requires teachers to have even one course on children's social and emotional development before they graduate as a teacher. And yet once they become a teacher, almost every teacher will tell you that the fundamental skill that's most important in being a teacher is creating a sense of community in their classrooms where they can get all children to work together in ways that allow them to have more classroom engagement and therefore more learning. So we have a situation where teachers come to the classroom with almost no background in children's social-emotional development, how peer relations work, the sort of the developmental neuroscience of self-control and empathy. And even though they may be well-skilled in teaching reading and math, they're not well-skilled in necessarily how to make a classroom a healthy environment for learning. And so one of the things we want to think about is not just can teachers be instructed in how to use a good social-emotional learning program. We want to go back systemically and ask the question, why is it that our colleges of education don't see children's social and emotional development as central to educating the whole child?
What about those who might say, you know, the teachers who are teaching the science and technology or the, you know, the reading and writing and that sort of thing, we need to concentrate on that and not social and emotional skills of children?
Well, you know, that's interesting because when you look at the world of business and you look at what we call preparation for 21st century skills, it turns out that, of course, these technological skills like reading and math or computer science or science and technology in general are very important. But when you ask employers, what are the most important skills? They say, well, those are skills we can teach on the job, but we can't teach people how to get along with each other. We can't teach people how to work in groups, which is fundamental now to almost all work in science and technology. We can't teach people how to become leaders or how to negotiate. And in fact, the reason why people do or do not move up in their professions is primarily not because of their technical skills, but because of their social and emotional skills. And so what we see is that employers are talking about college and career readiness. More and more are focused on these skills that have to do with the ability to get along with others, to work in groups, to communicate effectively, to set effective goals for yourself and for others. It's in fact these very social-emotional skills that appear to be those that are most important for adult success, even more important than our technical skills.
So, Dr. Greenberg, can you teach some of our listeners who get into big arguments on our Facebook pages to to calm down and respect other people's points of view?
Well, as you know, that people often fire away emails that if they had just taken a few more minutes to stop and calm down and take a few deep breaths, they might not have sent. And this is no different than in our normal lives, that oftentimes when we feel the feeling of regret for something we've done with a friend or a spouse, it's often because we know we didn't calm down enough before we responded, and that's especially the case when we get into social media communications.
Yeah, but one of the social skills is kids that will respect other kids' opinions and points of view.
That's right. That's right. And you know, one of the most important skills here is being able to listen to others. Not just to be able to assert your own point of view, but actually learning to listen. And we as adults know that in our marriages and our closest interpersonal relationships, that oftentimes it's hard to listen. We want to let the other person know how we feel. We want to make our point of view clear. And oftentimes, what our spouse or our coworker wants is not to hear our point of view, but just to be listened to for a while. And so one of the most important skills we know is learning how to listen deeply to other people.
Yeah. Let's go to Mary in Platteville. Hello, Mary.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. You know, I'm so excited to hear this topic because I'm a recently retired educator, and I've worked in the area of special services for years. And everything that your guest is saying is so true. And we used to do that so much better. When I began my career as a in school special services in the 1990s, we were teaching things like this in school. We had training, we had funding, and now the pendulum has kind of swung the other way, and we're doing so much more with academic testing. We don't have the funding anymore. We used to have safe and drug-free schools money. We used to be able to write grants and things like that for curriculum. And send teachers for training and do all of this. And we have not been able to do that for years. There's no time in the day with all the testing and requirements and academic, math and science push. And it's really frustrating for those of us who work in special services to see that these kinds of skills are not being taught in the classroom, and teachers don't know how to teach this stuff. We're seeing more and more students in our offices as we try and run groups for kids and teaching them social skills, where that is something all kids need, all adults need. And so I'm so glad that this topic is being discussed. But it's interesting to me as someone who's now retired to think, we used to do this so much better. What happened to us?
What happened to us, Dr. Greenberg?
Well, I guess a lot of things happened. One, I think, is that we would all agree that we live in a more stressful society than we did 20 or 30 years ago, and that we live in a culture of sound bites. But I think that, you know, American educational policy is in large part responsible for this. The law we call No Child Left Behind, I call The Whole Child Left Behind. That is, we continue to think that if we do more of the same, which is spend more time on reading and more time on math, if we just spend more time on those things, somehow this will lead to higher achievement. But in fact, it's not the case. In fact, we know that schools that do just what Mary's saying, have good social-emotional learning with well-trained teachers, have higher academic outcomes. Because it's not spending much more time on reading and math or giving children a lot more homework that's going to make them more skilled. It's having them ready to learn. And the readiness to learn is really the key issue here. And that's where these social-emotional skills are important. But let's just not focus on social-emotional skills. Let's focus on what we think about as holistic education or the whole child. This is not just a case where Mary's saying that social-emotional development has been pushed aside, but so have the arts and so have music and other things that make us alive as beings, as adults who are engaged in, as citizens in our democracy, that are interested in art and literature and cultural issues. And yet we spend most of the time, especially with children who need it the most, just focused on these academic subjects and testing. So we have to ask ourselves, what kind of adults are we turning out in a culture in which citizenship and democracy should be our most important values?
Sherry writes on Facebook, our elementary school has recently initiated a recess policy where kids are only allowed to play chase or tag games if they are led by an adult supervisor. This was implemented due to many children getting upset or fighting over student-initiated games. Mm-hmm. And she wonders if you have any comment on this.
I do. Mm-hmm. I do. That's what that school is saying, basically. They're saying we can't let children be children and learn how to play with each other. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they're having problems in their playground probably is due to both the structure of the playground, but also back to social-emotional learning. If children are learning how to play games with each other and they're taught how to do this well and they're given support on what happens when the game doesn't go well, does anybody remember when you were kicked out of a game as a child and how you felt, what you did next? All this is the meat of childhood, and all of us can remember back if we just close our eyes a minute and think about what it was like on the second grade playground. There were lots of emotions going on, and children's abilities to manage those emotions in that second grade playground are exactly what we're saying predicts these adult successful skills. It's those abilities to regulate. It's the ability to talk yourself down when you're feeling rejected. It's the ability to go and make a new friend or decide something else effective to do that, in fact, are the kind of skills that make us healthy and have high well-being, not only as children, but as we grow up.
Isn't this something that parents and families should be doing? Do we really need to handle this in the classroom?
Well, of course, we could say that there are many things that parents and families should be doing, and I think that's one argument that people say, well, we don't really need to do this in school. This should all be done in the home. Most families these days are either two-parent families that are working hard at two jobs, or in many cases, and for disadvantaged children in America, a single parent who's struggling and working very hard at maybe two jobs or three jobs. And so while it would be great to go backwards and say, well, yeah, sure, let's all just have this done in the families, we know that children are coming to school with lots of emotional difficulties and concerns and stresses that families just aren't successfully able to handle these days. And so it's really left to the school as part of the education of a whole child to teach children better ways to manage their relationships, better ways to manage stress, more ways to be successful in living in our culture.
Jennifer in Duluth. I'm sorry, we're almost out of time, Jennifer, if you could be as brief as possible.
Okay. Am I?
Yes, you're on. Go ahead.
Okay. I just want to say I was raised in a single mom family, no dad present, had no discipline, did horrible in school, special ed, everything, went into the Army at 20, learned discipline, graduated top of my class in dental hygiene school. I am raising two girls. I have a healthy marriage, been married 20 years. A lot of this has to do with discipline and kids just learning that you have to sit and you have to learn and you have to have respect for people and have a healthy fear of authority, which we are lacking in this world big time.
I'm glad everything worked out for you, Jennifer. We have less than a minute, Dr. Greenberg. What about more discipline is what's needed?
Well, I think children need discipline, and children need good boundaries, and we need to have what we'd call love and limits. We need to show children exactly what the limits are. That's very important. As a parent, I can tell you that. But we also need to show them love at the same time, and it's that balance of love and limits that's so important. And getting that balance right for the parent, for a parent, especially as children develop into adolescence, is if you can do it, it's one of the most important things that one can achieve in life.
Yeah, well, that's a good place for us to end it. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Dr. Mark Greenberg, founding director of the Prevention Research Center for the Promotion of Human Development at Pennsylvania State University. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing this hour. Thanks to Scotty Myers and to Michelle Good for on-air production and direction. And thank you for listening. Kathleen Dunn, under the weather today. She hopes to be back tomorrow. Thanks very much for listening. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.